Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome. It's that time of the week again when we all get together to celebrate all things cycling. I'm Phil Minot and you're listening to
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Coming up in this week's programme, we discuss the outcome of this week's County Council vote for the COVID-19 temporary cycling measures here in Cambridgeshire. Are sporting cyclists about to get back on their bikes? Well, we find out when we talk to two hopefuls. And our guest on a bike this week is a former Cambridge MP who turned a House of Commons washroom into an aquarium for newts.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Joining us later from behind their own bike sheds will be Behind the Bike Shed regular and a keen sportive cyclist, Kate Sanders. And joining us for the first time will be Graham Temple. Graham's a sportive events organiser and a member of St Ives Cycling Club. But first of all, as always, I'm delighted to welcome back Roxanne Dubout, who is CAM Cycles' Executive Director. First of all, happy birthday, Roxanne. 25 years old.
I wish I was 25 still, but it's not my birthday. It's actually CAM Cycles' 25 years anniversary.
Yeah, I knew that. I was just being nice to you and polite. So 25 years. Of course, the cycling scene, I guess, has changed over 25 years. Do you think the founders, and I know some of them are still members today, do you think they would have imagined 25 years ago that cycling would become such an important part of today's political decision making here in the UK?
I think they would have imagined this. I think that they wouldn't have started the campaign if they didn't think it was possible. And actually, I imagine in some ways they would have wished that we were at this stage many, many years ago. But we are here at last. Unfortunately, it has taken us a pandemic to get the level of change that we've really wanted to see and that we are now seeing. But here we are, and we're making the most of what we can do right now.
Now, over that period, I mean, cycle campaigning has become very mainstream, hasn't it? But I would imagine when it was first founded, well, I know for a fact, 25 years ago, I mean, cycling campaigners were basically considered as outsiders. And that was also by people within other sectors within cycling.
Yeah, and I think so much has changed. We're so much more aware of the climate and the impact, particularly of private motor vehicles on climate change and air pollution. So that's really getting people who maybe wouldn't have thought of themselves as a cycling campaigner before, but they care about the environment and they know that cycling is a key way to help prevent climate change. So we're attracting new people in that way. And I think also the power of the internet and social media would certainly have a lot more ability to communicate with more people now through the internet, and I think that's brought a lot more people on board for campaigning. But I also think it's because CAM Cycle in particular, we've just done such a great job of getting out there, engaging with the community, putting forward a new vision, and that's brought more people our way. And this week we've also reached a new milestone, which is 1,500 members for CAM Cycle, so we're clearly appealing to people.
That's a massive number of people, isn't it? Do you know how many members there were approximately at the first meeting?
Oh, goodness, I should know that. I think we had at least 30 at that very first meeting, and a good number of them are still involved today.
And you just describe to listeners the sort of an average member, if there's such thing.
Well, there's certainly some stereotypes, but I don't think there is an average member anymore. We do have a long way to go, though. We know we need to do more to be more inclusive, to showcase more of the diversity of people who do cycle. There is a way to go there, but we have improved them up. We see a lot more women involved. We're doing a better job of showing families and disabled people cycling as well. So there is no average cyclist or cycling campaigner. Anyone can ride a bike, really. So, and we say, we don't even say cyclists, it's people who cycle. It's just something you happen to do to get from A to B.
Earlier this week, Cambridgeshire County Council Transport and Highways Committee had a big meeting. They're making lots of decisions, and primarily one of the things on the agenda was the COVID-19 temporary cycling measures in Cambridgeshire. Roxanne, were you pleased with the outcome?
Yes, we are very pleased. And I spoke at that meeting to thank councillors and officers in particular for the incredible amount of work that they put in a very short period of time. And we know they were working a lot of overtime and weekends just to get this going. And we're very pleased with what they've produced. Of course, there's always areas that need refining and improving, and we're going through now with our fine-tooth comb and providing that feedback to the council. But they've been really bold here, and we're very pleased with some of these schemes.
Now, I mean, it's a massive list of schemes, isn't it, happening across the whole county? So I'm just going to highlight a few, and then maybe once I've done that, Roxanne, you'd perhaps like to comment on a few of them and, you know, and describe to the listeners how it's going to be done and incorporated, and perhaps to the non-cyclists how they perhaps might start to think about changing their lifestyles. So one of the ones is going to be Four Hill in Ely, and that's quite a steep hill, but they're going to be including a new one-way cycle path there. And there's also going to be a path onto the A1303, which is to Newmarket Town Centre. They're going to introduce lower speed limits in March, and they're going to be related to school opening times. There's also going to be a two-way cycling in Huntington High Street, suspended car parking in Market Square St Neots, which I have to say is going to completely change how the town centre looks there, a 20 mile per hour speed limit in Milton on the High Street, and there's going to be on-road cycle lanes on Newmarket Road. And they're going to be closing Mill Road in Cambridge to all vehicles other than buses and cycles. There's a lot there, Roxanne, to digest. Any one of those projects particularly you'd like to highlight?
Well, of course, Mill Road is in my backyard, so that's something I'm particularly passionate about. But perhaps I'll just start with saying we're seeing some themes here with these schemes. And the first one of those themes is what the council and the government is calling point closures. And really, these are modal filters, or places where the road is blocked to stop cars going through. They can get everywhere they used to go, but they can't go through. So you stop that rat running, and that significantly reduces traffic and it reduces speed. And this is a really cost-effective and quick way to create a corridor, which is now safe for cycling and walking. But it also creates a more pleasant space for local people to get out into the street, feel more relaxed, particularly if we're not going on holidays. You know, we'll be spending a lot more time at home, so let's make home a lot nicer to be. So we're seeing a lot of those schemes. Likewise, we're seeing road space reallocation. So that's where car parking is being taken out, or a road lane is being taken out so that we can create more space for cycling. And these are the kind of schemes that central government has really pushed local authorities to put in, and it's that level of scheme that's required if they want the funding. So really pleased to see that the council is stepping up there. And likewise, seeing a lot of schemes that CanCycle has advocated for a very long time, and finally we're seeing them. And I would say that we probably wouldn't be seeing some of those schemes if it wasn't for us setting that vision sometimes many years ago or months ago, along with the campaigning work we've been doing now. So it's certainly been, this hasn't come out of nowhere. There's been thinking on this for quite a while, and Mill Road is one such example where we put our vision for Mill Road out a few years ago, and we're about to see it come to life. It's very exciting.
Now, of course, the county and the whole country is facing, as you mentioned, a huge public health emergency. And I guess these quick measures, the idea is that they can support people, and presumably the idea is to encourage people to walk and cycle more. And I guess a lot of these measures are going to help provide more extra space for people. And I guess that's going to help reduce traffic flow. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so there's a number of things we need to deal with here. The first thing is that people won't be able to use public transport at the same levels as they were previously. And if people can't use public transport, that means they've either got to get in the car or they've got to walk or cycle. And many people don't have a car, can't afford a car, can't drive a car, so that's just not going to be an option. We need to make sure they've got a viable alternative, or that at least for those people, they have space on the bus, and everyone else who can travel in another way does so. So we need to make sure, though, that buses are still running smoothly. If we can have more frequent bus services, then that helps to compensate for the reduced capacity on each bus. The other issue that we then have is more people walking and cycling, and they need to do so safely. That means safely able to distance from other people, but also safely in terms of reducing road danger. Because if people don't feel safe on the roads, then they won't walk or cycle, and then they'll get in their cars as well. So there's a huge risk that we end up with a lot of extra car traffic if we don't quickly put in these other methods or enable these other methods. And what we've seen during lockdown is that people, so many people were cycling and walking. We've never seen these levels of cycling, particularly for people that don't normally cycle. So let's use that now while people are feeling positive about cycling and create the space they need as car traffic starts to increase.
Now, Councillor Ian Bates, who was on the programme last week, and he's chairman of the Highways and Transport Committee at Cambridgeshire County Council, he does stress in his press release that these are temporary changes, and they're open for discussion with the city and the district councils in Greater Cambridge Partnership, but perhaps more important, organisations such as CamCycle and general members of the public. So, Roxanne, if general members of the public have concerns from a cycling point of view, are you happy for them to contact CamCycle?
Yes, absolutely. But ultimately, they should be talking to their councillors as well, just so that they know exactly where that information is going. But we've been running our Spaces to Breathe campaign since well before the county started taking action on any of these issues to gather people's ideas and suggestions. And it's still really important that we keep gathering those, because this is just the start. There is a tranche two or a phase two of funding coming through. And the government is also now pushing for a green recovery where there will be more permanent infrastructure, I guess, where the government will fund more permanent infrastructure as well. So this is just the start. There's more coming. And yes, this is temporary, and it's a great time for us to try some things and see what works, take that evidence, refine schemes, and maybe work out that, okay, that didn't work there. Should it be tried somewhere else? Or a modal filter doesn't work there, but a cycle lane does. So we need to get as much of that evidence as possible to help with these schemes, but to also inform the future schemes that go in Cambridge. So it's all temporary. And I hope that means that people will be more willing to give it a go. Because if not now, then when? And it's not just the fact that we need to get more people moving, but we must reduce air pollution. And we have to be bold to do that. So let's give it a go while we've got the chance and we've got the funding.
Well, thank you so much, as always, Roxanne, for coming in to give us a different perspective. Ran out of time on this section. And I know it's been a busy week for you, Roxanne, and you and your colleagues. So a happy birthday again to all of you at CamCycle. And as a special birthday present, myself and the producer of Behind the Bike Shed here, Jane, thought it would be apt if we tracked down one of your first members, and certainly at the time must have been one of CamCycle's highest profile members. And that's coming up. You can meet that person after this very short break.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
It's time to meet today's guest on a bike.
Indeed it is, Tony, and I'm delighted to say our guest today is Anne Campbell, former MP for Cambridge. Nearly 13 years, wasn't it, Anne?
It was indeed. Yes, it was.
So, Anne, I've got lots of things I need to ask you. And first of all, when you first came to Cambridge, which was to Newnham College, had you ridden a bicycle before?
Well, I'd had a go on friends' bikes. I was really keen to have a bike. My parents couldn't afford to buy me one. And I tried saving up my pocket money to buy one, but I never actually succeeded. So when I came to Cambridge with my first term's grant in my pocket, one of the first things I did was to find a bicycle. I remember going down Mill Road and finding a bike shop right at the end over the railway bridge. And that's where I bought my first bicycle.
Now, while you were in Cambridge, I guess, was it at university where you got the political bug?
No, not really. It wasn't until after I left university, in a way. I think, you know, Cambridge was quite overwhelming to somebody like me who'd been to my local comprehensive school in the north of England, and it was very different. And so coming to terms with all that meant that I didn't have much time for politics, actually. But I did get the bug very shortly afterwards, and I was very enthused by Harold Wilson's White Heat of Technology. And I joined the Labour Party shortly after I left university.
And I think most of us, you first came on most people's radar when you joined Cambridgeshire County Council. And at the same time, I think you were working at NIAB?
Yes, that's correct. But I had been sort of politically involved before that. So in 1980, family had a year sabbatical in Zurich. I came back. It was the first year of the Conservative government, and Margaret Thatcher was busy cutting funds for education, something which I felt very strongly about. And so I got involved in an organisation called the Inter-PTA for Cambridgeshire, which was a parent-teachers association. It was a sort of federation of parent-teachers associations. So I was very actively involved in fighting cuts against cuts for education. So that was a county-wide movement, and it was pretty successful, actually. The Conservative County Council were quite worried about it.
So you also, when you were at NIAB as well, I think that's probably when you started to make headlines of the fact that because you were involved, weren't you, in a campaign for equal wages for women?
Yes. I started at NIAB in 1983, and some years after starting, realised that as a head of department, the only female head of department, actually, I was being paid less than the men, which was outrageous. And so after trying to sort it out internally, I finally took them to an industrial tribunal, which is not something I recommend that people do without thinking about it very seriously. But the Equal Opportunities Commission found me a lawyer who turned out to be, my barrister anyway, turned out to be Cherie Blair, the one married to Tony, which was quite interesting. We did go through an industrial tribunal. We didn't win, but NIAB did restructure its salaries after that.
So was it Cherie Blair who encouraged you to stand to be an MP for the 1992 general election?
Well, no, it's a bit strange. So what happened was that the Labour Party has various lists which you can go on if you want to be a candidate. And somebody added my name to one of these lists, and I don't know to this day who it was. And my reaction at the time was, well, this is not something I particularly thought about or not really anxious to do, but hey, well, my name's there, so I'll leave it there and let's just have a go. And because you know, work was difficult actually at the time because of my disagreement with NIAB, I decided that I would try seriously. So there was a shortlist of five. There were two women on the shortlist, and I was determined that either I or the other woman there was going to, was going to do as really as well as we could.
Now, when you did get elected in 1992, you made headlines again, and I remember that because I was one of the people taking photographs for the Nationals of you. Mm-hmm. Because you weren't quite unique, but it was probably a first in the modern history of Cambridge for a Cambridge MP to actually cycle around their constituency to meetings and during all sorts of weather. I can remember you turning up on your bicycle. Did it strike you as a bit weird that everyone was suddenly interested in the fact that you were riding a bicycle on a daily basis?
Well, such a common thing to have a bicycle in Cambridge. It's rather extraordinary that I was the first MP. I mean, the previous MP, Robert Rose James, actually lived outside Cambridge. So I suppose it would have been more difficult for him. But it was just, most of the councillors cycled. So I found it very odd that I was out on a limb, because what I was doing was what a lot of my constituents were doing, which was cycling around Cambridge.
And you haven't stopped cycling since, really, have you? Because I saw you just before lockdown, and we passed each other near Mill Road, didn't we? And I was walking, and you were cycling, and it was, oh, hello, Anne. And you haven't changed at all. Do you put cycling down? Is that quite important for you as a form of exercise still?
Yes, I mean, it's more as a form of transport, actually. Well, first of all, I think Cambridge is quite a difficult place to cycle because of all the traffic, although it's been much easier during lockdown. I do it because I enjoy it. I don't like driving particularly, although I do drive on occasions. It's healthy. It keeps me fit. It means I don't have to go to the gym if I'm cycling. and it helps to get me from A to B, usually in a way that's much quicker than going by car. So it just seems to make sense to me.
And the other thing, of course, I can remember you turning up to, whether it be VIP openings and that sort of stuff, and you'd been invited along as a guest, and quite often you were the VIP. I can remember you turning up on your push bike, and people holding the event, they'd actually had a parking space reserved for you, hadn't they? But they didn't have anywhere to put your bicycle.
That's right. Yes, people were quite surprised when I turned up on a bicycle. But I do think it should be the new norm, and particularly now when we've got used to the roads being much emptier, I think there will be far more people who will be prepared to cycle, and people just get used to it.
And of course, the other thing which you received more publicity for, which seems very strange now, but you were the first MP, weren't you, ever? The first British MP to have their own website.
Yes, I just want to pay tribute to my friend Bill Thompson, who now works for the BBC, but he was the one who persuaded me that would be a good thing to do, and actually helped me to construct it. So, yes. That was something which my parliamentary friends considered to be very weird, much more weird than riding a bicycle, actually. But having one's own website was, most people just didn't know what websites were in those days.
Let's play Spin That Wheel.
OK, Anne, are you ready? Because now's the time when we get to play
Spin That Wheel.
I'm going to give you three minutes of questions relating to your everyday cycling habits. The great thing about this quiz is, of course, you know the answers before I do, so you're going to get them all right. So 3 minutes, and once you hear the bleep, we shall start the questions. Here goes. Good luck.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Spin That Wheel.
Anne Campbell, what's your earliest memory of cycling?
Well, my earliest memory is in Cambridge when I went to buy my first bicycle down in a bicycle shop on Mill Road, and I had somehow to get it back to college, which was in Newnham. So I think I fell off several times because I wasn't a very good cyclist in those days. So that was my earliest memory.
That's such a good early memory cycling story. Thank you for that. What type of cycling do you enjoy most?
Well, I do enjoy just cycling around Cambridge, actually. But in previous years, my husband and I have holidayed in Brittany, and we had there two rather sporty bikes, which we used for cycling around the French countryside, which is wonderful. Much emptier of traffic than it ever is in England, and very hilly too. So it was good exercise.
Ooh la la, sounds very nice. And how often do you cycle these days?
Well, I probably cycle most days when I'm allowed to. Lockdown has been quite difficult, but I cycle to the allotment, for instance, which is down off Ancaster Way, and that's not very far, but it gives me a bit of exercise.
What sort of bicycle do you currently pedal?
Oh, just, you know, the standard Cambridge big heavy frame with a basket on front and panniers at the back. And I put the dog in the basket on the front, and I just look like a veteran Cambridge cyclist, really.
That's going to be a picture worth taking, you and my dog in my basket. What would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you? Whereabouts in the world would it be?
Well, now, that's quite difficult. I think possibly in France. Yes, I think in France, around the French countryside. I think there are some lovely paths around the coast in Brittany. And I have cycled on some of them, but I'd like to do some of the Grand Routes in France. That would be great.
What's the longest distance you've ever cycled, Anne?
Well, I suppose it was the time when my husband and I decided to holiday without the car. So we arrived in Roscoff in Brittany, having taken the overnight boat, and went into Roscoff, had breakfast and coffee, shops opened. We went to the bicycle shop and bought the two sports bikes. We only had two. I was very amazed to get rid of both of them on the same day. But we then cycled from there to middle of Brittany, where we were staying, which was about 50 miles in a straight line, probably a bit more.
Oh, well done. Well done. That's superb. Thank you so much there, Anne Campbell. That was really interesting. You have quite an active cycling life, don't you? Now, when you very kindly agreed to come on and join in Behind the Bike Shed, you said to me you'd quite like to highlight what you're doing in Petersfield in case other people are listening in lockdown and it may well help them.
Yes. Okay. Well, of course, this is quite a difficult period for a lot of people. And the Petersfield Mutual Aid Group, and I think a lot of the other mutual aid groups in the city, have been brilliant in forming the WhatsApp groups, which encompass most of the streets in Petersfield. However, I became a bit concerned that there were a lot of people who perhaps didn't have access to the technology or didn't know how to use it, who might be being excluded from that. So what I've done is to get together with the mutual aid group, some of the city councillors, Mike Davies has been very helpful, and some of the city council officers. And we produce a weekly newsletter, which goes out to some people as a printed letter. They don't have access to the information in any other way. It also appears on a website, petersfield.link. Together with the website run by Rob Kinnear, who's been brilliant at collecting information. And the newsletter is part of his website. So if you want to know which shops are open, who delivers, their phone numbers, latest government regulations, what's happening to the infection rate in Cambridge and all that sort of stuff, then that's the place to go.
Okay, well, that's great. And I'm guessing other communities have got similar things people need to tap into, or more important, if they know somebody who perhaps it would help them to tap into that sort of thing. Now, before you go, Anne, because I know you're very busy, as always, much in demand, I remember many years ago turning up at your Cambridge home and your lovely husband, Archibald, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he told me that in your pond you had newts which had been given to you by Ken Livingstone.
Well, yes, Archie had been rather part of that. So he came to visit me in the House of Commons, found himself sitting next to Ken in one of the bars, I think, and they started talking about newts. And Ken said, "Oh, I can give Anne some newts if you like." And he rang my office on a Thursday morning, because I used to spend Monday to Thursday in London. And he said, "I've got the newts," which was slightly alarming for my assistant, because she didn't know what he was talking about. Anyway, he brought these newts round in a little plastic ice cream box and said, "Keep them cool." Well, it was quite a hot summer's day, and I decided I could only keep them cool by putting them in a lady members' room in the bar. So we had a little lady members' room with a sort of bathroom off it, and I put the newts, actually still in their plastic box, in the bath with a bit of cold water in the bottom. And I put a note on the door saying, "Beware newts in the bath," just to warn my colleagues that they might be there. Well, I was surprised that quite a lot of people were rather upset by this and didn't think the bath in the lady members' room was an appropriate place for newts. So I didn't make myself any friends. But I have to say, the newts survived. I got them home. I put them in the pond. And they're still there to this day.
And it's been an absolute delight catching up with you. And hopefully at some point we can do a similar thing again soon.
Well, I very much enjoyed it, Phil. Thank you.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Thanks again to Anne Campbell, early member of Cam Cycle there. Since recording that, Anne did contact us to say that actually she had recalled that the longest journey she ever did ride on her bicycle was during her time as a Cambridge undergraduate, when she rode home to the family home to the Yorkshire Pennines because she couldn't afford the rail fare. She did stay overnight in Grantham Youth Hostel, but I reckon that's quite a long time to have cycled on a typical student bike myself. But the guests joining me now here on Behind the Bike Shed are used to these sort of mileages. In fact, they relish it. So it's Kate Saunders, who's a Behind the Bike Shed regular and keen sportive cyclist. And also, I'm delighted to say, joining us for the first time, but hopefully not the last, we have Graham Temple, who's a sportive events organiser, and he's a member of St Ives Cycling Club. Welcome, both of you, and thank you for joining us.
Good evening.
Good, excellent. Now, so just telling you about Anne's journey there on her bicycle, a student bicycle. North Pennines, that's about 100 and... must be about 200 miles, isn't it, from Cambridge?
Yeah, it's a good distance, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a long way.
Yeah, she seems the sort of person who I think would make an ideal sportive rider. Graham, you're an events organiser of sportives. Explain to the listeners what a sportive is.
A sportive is a challenge ride. It's not a competitive ride. It's a challenge ride. Normally, it's over the hilliest or the hardest route you can come across, which is not so easy in this area. Yes, it's a challenge ride. And normally, you have it over two or three different distances to suit the ages and abilities of riders. It can be 100 miles, 120 miles, top distance, and the shortest distance could be 25 miles. It depends on the abilities and where and what people want it for. So it's quite a varied sport in itself, actually, but it's only an original from the old days when we used to run things called reliability trials, which were sort of training for races back in the sort of 50s and 60s. That's how they started.
So, Kate, I'm going to bring you in here now. Kate, why would anyone want to ride a sportive? You've ridden quite a few now.
I have ridden a few, actually, yeah. So sportives at first got me into cycling, the opportunity to, you know, kind of have somebody else to tell me where to go or help me work out a route and know that it will be supported. So that was a way to kind of start challenging myself with feeling like I had a bit of backup, I suppose.
So, Graham, now I'm old enough to have ridden and remembered Audaxes, which, they're like a very basic sportive in some way, aren't they? Now, you offer luxuries now, don't you, when you people put on a sportive?
Yes, the Audax was a different organisation that ran these, but they were very good and very interesting, and I've ridden quite a few of them myself as well. Sportives tend to be, and it's a sign of the times, people want... as Kate has just mentioned, like the signed route, know where she's going, and then we'd have to put in feed stops, because obviously the welfare of people, so they can stop, eat, drink, and obviously use any facilities that are there, normally village halls, something like that. And you keep people going, and you'd have to put on a bit of mechanical support, the affectionate thing called the broom wagon, which is a vehicle that goes around the back, normally takes the signs down as well. But also can pick people up if they have a mechanical problem or their legs have failed a little bit, those sort of things. So, yeah, there's a lot of extras put in there. But I think it's all part and parcel of the modern version of a Audax or where you were self-sufficient and everything else. So I think people want a bit more, and they can turn up. They get a number. Sometimes you have a photographer out. You can have it timed, so people can have a challenge against their friends. But it's not a race. It's just a challenge. And with a few luxuries in there, you can stop, have a cup of tea, nice bit of fruitcake.
So I'm sure actually you've whetted the appetite of even non-cyclists listening who now want to take part in a sportive. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to give Kate and Graham a very short rest. Graham's definitely the sort of person we want to have back on this programme, because he just told me off air very quickly that I said to him, I used to be a member of the Archer Cycling Club, which is a London-based club. I said, that's the one Bradley Wiggins' dad was a member of. And what did you say to me, Graham?
When Gary first came over to the UK, he lived with us for 18 months.
So there's definitely another interview there. So we're talking about sportives today, but we shall definitely talk about that in the future, if that's okay with you. Now, Kate, we're talking about sportives, and I know that you've ridden sportives, haven't you, with your fellow girlfriend cyclists. Is there a reason, do you think as a female, do you feel more secure riding an organised sportive than if you were going to go out and do 120 miles with just yourself and a mate?
That would be certainly why I started riding them. They were a really nice way for me to kind of get into cycling.
without feeling like, you know, I'll be honest, when I started cycling, didn't entirely know how to fix the puncture. So it was a really nice way for me to kind of get in and start building up my fitness and just think about the challenge without having to worry too much about the other side of things. So I think that is a nice reason to get into sportives, because you do definitely see quite a lot of other women do them.
So, Graham, now I know that I've been told by other people that Wheels in Wheels events, and that's what reason why we approached you, they're a very friendly event. And is that something you try to focus on? Is that something you can focus on when you organise them?
Yeah, the people that work with us are all cyclists, or have been cyclists or currently cyclists. So they have a very good empathy on what's going on. And with so many people coming into cycling over the last 20 years and this year, even more so, there's just phenomenal growth. We'd like to tune our events. And the one we run locally, which is the Richardson's Rumble, is we have ride leaders and chaperones for people who are doing their first sportive. And we call it Come and Try. So, in other words, we teach people how to ride along in a group, drink when they're going along, make sure they are drinking when they go along. And the chaperones are very experienced sportive riders, normally ex-racers, but have ridden many, many sportives and now have all this knowledge that they don't mind imparting onto other riders. And that makes it more comfortable for people, especially first timers. It's a silly thing, and I don't want to belittle people, but some people find it difficult to ride along and drink. They prefer to stop and drink. You know, you see the professionals do it, and it's just, you know, to a penny for them. But it is a little bit of an art, and we sort of teach those sort of things. We're not saying you should do it if you can't do it, but we just try and help people along and tell them when they eat and things like this. So they have a good experience and they don't go away thinking that was just terrible. You know, it was too hard, it was too fast. We control the speed to the group and things like that. So the Come and Try side of things, and this year, the Richardson's Rumble, we put on a family ride, which is going to be on 90% family on cycle paths, so the family can ride as a group. And it's, you know, we're just doing it for charity, for the local mayor's charity. But we, you know, so that they can get the idea of what goes on at a sportive from a slot of different aspect. And they may step up, and other people, they might do the Come and Try next year, or they might step up to a longer distance. So it's a whole family thing now. The sportives, I think of these, you know, banging out 120 miles and 80 miles or whatever, is going to have to be, we're going to have to change, because there's going to be a new normal now. And I think we need this new normal to be even more friendlier and easier to work.
Yeah, well said, Graham. I think everyone's starting to feel like that. We need a lot more. You need to change the world just a little bit, don't we? Now, at the opening, at the top of the programme, I promised our listeners that we were going to be offering some hope for those cyclists who have been spending all summer keeping fit and spending lockdown out and about on their bikes, when they've been allowed to. So, Graham, we're relying on you, because you have postponed some of your events, haven't you? And you're going to be putting them on later this year instead.
Yeah, obviously with the lockdown, we had to postpone. I'll be honest, we've gambled with the dates. The Richardson's Rumble, which we should have been running in April, is now 27th of September. And all the people who have entries have been notified as well. And information's on our website. The Forest of Dean, which is our classic event, which has been going sort of 18 years now, that's going to be in October. And then our traditional end of season one, Tour of Worcester, that's on the same date as it should have been. But we've had to postpone them to then, and they're still subject to obviously what government regulations are at the time.
Okay. Then the other thing, I guess, anyone who's thinking of entering might want to know, what happens if for some reason they can't go ahead? Is their money safe?
Yes. Yeah, we don't. We have to operate at...
To be honest, I think saying yes is just all people want to hear.
Yes.
And you're going to transfer people's entries, I guess, if for some reason they can't go ahead.
There is an insurance people can take out if the event is finally cancelled as well. So
yeah,
that's all built into the actual.
Okay. So before we go, Kate, what sort of cycling have you been doing this summer? Have you sort of hoping they might be able to get a sportive in at the end of the year?
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? So obviously, I was signed up for one, and it's been cancelled for this year. But at the moment, I'm just taking things easy and enjoying a bit of a change of pace and pooping around on my own. And I'm finding actually that gives me more time to look at the countryside and taking the views rather than, you know, perhaps worrying about the competition or what the person in front of me is doing. So I'm kind of missing my friends and the social side of club riding and indeed sportive, but. You know what, we just have a change of pace this year and we have to make the most of it.
Thank you, Kate. That was very good of you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Graham, as well. Can you believe it? The finishing line is fast approaching. We have run out of time yet again here on Behind the Bike Shed. So I'd like to say a thanks to today's guest, Roxanne from Cam Cycle, and a happy anniversary, of course, to everyone at Cam Cycle. Kate and Graham, thank you so much for coming in and joining in the fun today. And of course, to our guest on a bicycle, thank you, Anne Campbell. Now, if you'd like to contact the programme, it's quite simple because we would love to hear from you, all your cycling knickknacks. And if you've got anything of interest you think we should be featuring, then please do let us know. You can email us at bikeshed@cambridge105.co.uk. Alternatively, you can contact the show via our Facebook page, which is at Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio. And that's handle for it is at BTBSC105. And on that very page, I shall be posting the Cambridgeshire County Council press release with a little bit more detail and comment about the COVID-19 cycling action, I guess, if you want. So all the bits and pieces happening across the infrastructure here in Cambridgeshire, and the road changes and stuff like that, all for pedestrians and cyclists. Wherever you live in the county, there's something happening on your doorstep. It's a big project. So please do check that out and you find out what's happening in your neighbourhood. And also, if you want to find out more about Sportive, you can find Graham at wheelsinwheels.com. And next week, alongside all the latest cycling news, we have another guest playing Spin That Wheel for you, and of course other guests as well. Just leaves me to say, you have been listening to Behind the Bike Shed. It's a Barking Hound production for Cambridge 105 Radio. The voice of Spin That Wheel was Tony Barnfield. Thank you, Tony. I'm Phil Minor, and until next time, say cycling.
Just to let you know, you can sponsor this programme on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.